Turning in your Bibles to the book of Habakkuk. While you're turning there, I just want to say thank you for having me. My name is Joe Hamm, and I work with the church in Philadelphia. And I came about the time that Scott was leaving, and Jeff and David and Scott asked me to come there. I've been hearing a lot of good things about the church here, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to finally visit. In 2010, I was worshiping as a member of the church at Embry Hills. I think about that time that Wes Gossett came to work with the church here. And then in 2011, I moved to Connecticut to work with the church in Wallingford, Connecticut, and had met the bishops and others, several others' families had moved through there. And about that time, I started being involved in the Joe Works Young Men's Camp. I met a lot of the young people here. And just over the years, have met a lot of you, and thankful for the opportunity to meet more of you. And wherever I go, I always hear good things about the church here, so I just want to pass that along. The book of Habakkuk, very interesting book. Minor prophet, major message. And that's what we're going to be looking at, spending some time this morning. Habakkuk lived in a time that was very uncertain. He was a righteous man living in a wicked country, and it grieved his soul greatly. And when I read Habakkuk, I think we can relate to this if we look around us today and see the society we're in, all the wickedness, the questions we have perhaps, how long could this go on? Why isn't God doing anything about this? When I was a younger man, I thought it was only the old people that were saying that the country is getting worse and worse. And the older I get, the more I realize what they're saying is true. And I'm sure you can relate to that as well. We don't know exactly when this book was written. If you read different commentaries or you have a study Bible, there's a slight variations in the date, but around 605 BC, we'll use that as a date, written before the southern kingdom of Judah was taken away. Northern kingdom had already been taken away. It's interesting, the name, I like to understand the names and what names mean in the Bible, and we talked a little about that this morning in the Bible class. And there is some controversy or debate about what the name Habakkuk means. It's not a traditional Hebrew name, but it is related to a Hebrew word, which means wrestle, or it also means like strong embrace. You see two people wrestling. There's that strong embrace. We see several times in the Bible where people wrestle with God, like Jacob wrestling with God, striving with God. But here you see a man who's wrestling with something. He's wrestling with the unrighteousness that's going on in his nation. And why is it happening? And why isn't God doing anything about it? And I don't know that this is original to me. They say the key to originality is just to forget where you got something from. But there's three W's that if we think about these, we can kind of remember what the book of Habakkuk is about. It's the prophet's going to wonder what's going on. He's going to wait. He's going to pray to the Lord and wait for his answer. And then he's going to decide to worship God despite what's going on around him, even if he suffers while the nation around him is going to be judged. And let's read just how the book opens. And before that, I just want to remind us that this is a very sinful time. There's a lot of injustice going on. And while some people were prospering materially, it was at the expense of some other people who were getting trodden upon. And we can relate to that in our own society. Some people are prospering, other people are getting taken advantage of. And those people who are prospering did not really, they had everything they needed, so they really didn't see their need for repentance. But Habakkuk knows God's standard of righteousness, and he's grieved over it. So let's read the first opening verses here, the first four verses. The oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw. How long, O Lord, will I call for help, and you will not hear? I cry out to you, violence, yet you do not save. Why do you make me see iniquity and make me look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Therefore, the law is ignored and justice is never upheld. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. Seems like he's been praying for some time and he doesn't understand why God is not listening to him. We mentioned the Bible class about a man who's praying, him and his wife praying for a child for a number of years, and he doesn't get an answer. You know, when you don't get an answer to a prayer immediately, you may think God's not listening. Here we see Habakkuk has been obviously praying about this situation, this injustice, for quite some time, and he doesn't understand. He's getting frustrated, perhaps, why God is not answering these prayers. Why is this happening? I want you to notice some of the words that he chooses to describe the society that he's in these first four verses. Words like violence, iniquity or sin, wickedness, destruction, strife, contention, injustice. And we could look around our own society and see a lot of these same things ourselves. And he's just puzzled. Why isn't God doing something about this? Now for us, are we ever discouraged about the things that go on in our society? Yes, we are. So I think we can relate to the prophet. Now, God is going to answer him, and we don't know how long God is delaying this. Obviously, he's been praying about this for some time, but when God does answer in verse 5, he's going to say that God is not asleep at the wheel here. God is working something out, but Habakkuk wouldn't understand it. He God operates at a higher level, and Habakkuk just is going to have trouble comprehending. What he's going to do is he's going to bring a wicked nation. God's going to use a wicked nation to judge Judah and to carry them away. And how, you know, Habakkuk is just going to have his mind blown by this. How could God use a wicked people to come and judge God's people? So let's read this, verse 5 and following. Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I'm doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. For behold, I'm raising up the Chaldeans, that's another name for the Babylonians, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They're dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate with themselves, meaning they're not serving God, they're serving their own desires. They make their own rules. Their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle sweeping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces moves forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings. Rulers are a laughing matter to them. They laugh at every fortress and just heap up rubble to capture it. Then they will sweep through like the wind and pass on. But they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God. They worship their own strength here. They find their own authority. What's amazing about this is even though God is using them as an instrument in his plan, the Babylonians don't realize that they're being used as an instrument for God. They are just serving their own appetite and their own desires, but God is using their own wicked appetite and their own desires for his greater purpose. Now, let's ask ourselves something. We don't have a prophet like Habakkuk to tell us what's going on today. But imagine this nation got so wicked that God decided to use, you know, and we grow up in public schools, or I did anyway, just patriotism, God bless America, this is God's country, and they were God's people. Well, what if we got so wicked, God said, I'm going to, and you can just think about the most wicked pagan nation on the world, and you think God using them to come and judge us, and we think, well, we're more righteous than they are because they are wicked, and you see what they do to people, and they just violence in the streets, and this is how they kill people. They're just savages, and God using them. That's the kind of shock that Habakkuk is going to feel, and I think we can relate to that because we would never in a million years think that God would maybe bring some nation wicked, more wicked than us, to come and judge us. And that's what he's going to ask here. He's going to ask in verse 12 and following. Let's look. He's going to ask, how could God approve of this? Now, he gives us a series of you statements here. Verse 12, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? Now, New American Standard says, we will not die. But I like how the NIV renders this. He's saying, you're the Holy One. You will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge. And you, O Rock, have established them to correct. Your eyes are too pure to approve evil. And you cannot look on wickedness with favor. Well, then why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those who are more righteous than they? He's talking about the Babylonians. How can he allow this big conquering force, look from your direction, this big expanding empire of the Babylonians just coming and swallowing up nation after nation after nation as it's on its approach to Judah? And he keeps on saying, why have you made men like fish of the sea, using this fishing analogy from 15 and down to the next verse? They basically just scoop up people in their net, and then they worship the net. You know, they don't even give attribute to God or anything. They use a net, and then they worship the object which they use to capture. Now, what's interesting about Habakkuk is he is going to turn to God for these answers. Yes, he's confused about what's going on. But instead of thinking that he has all the answers or pretending to think that he does, what he does is he seeks God. He says in chapter 2, verse 1, I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart, and I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me. So, number one, the first W I mentioned is he was wondering what's going on in his nation. But number two is he's going to wait on the Lord. He's going to wait on the Lord. But when he prays to God about this, what I'm really impressed, and I think what we can learn from Habakkuk is two things. One, he goes to God for answers, but yet he's willing to listen to God's answer. He's saying, I'm going to wait on him, and I'm even going to be willing to be rebuked if I need to be rebuked. He says, I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved. Imagine this rampart is somebody he's going to climb on the highest place he can find, and like somebody is watching, he's waiting to see what the Lord is going to say. And then verse 2, the Lord answered me and said, record the vision, inscribe it on tablets, that the one who reads it may run. Now, I've kind of wrestled with what this means. Some people think, well, this is the runner who's going to carry the message, and some people say, well, no, he's going to write it easily on tablets so somebody can read it quickly or run right over it and read it quickly. I'm not sure exactly what the intention of that is. But he says, God's judgment is going to come. And I know, and I'm paraphrasing here, I know you've been praying about this. I know you've been discouraged about this injustice that's going on. But I'm not asleep at the wheel here. My judgment will not delay. It's going to come in the time that I appoint it to come. Look at this, he says, it hastens towards, this is verse 3, it hastens towards the goal and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it will certainly come and it will not delay. This is an important verse because New Testament writers are going to pick up on this as well and use this. God's judgment and God's salvation are kind of two parts. When God brings judgment, he saves the remnant. When he saves people, he also judges the righteous. He judges the wicked as well. And so that's what God is going to be doing. It's a wicked nation. He's going to bring judgment on it, but yet he's going to save those. And the next verse, he says, behold, as for the proud, his soul's not right within him, but the righteous will live by their faith. Another important verse. We're going to see this in Galatians 3. We're going to see this in Romans 1. We're going to see this in Hebrews chapter 10. This idea and this theme is going to bring a lot. And once we understand this book of Habakkuk and what's going on here, and when we read it in the New Testament context, it's going to bring much more understanding to what's going on, because here's a righteous man who's vexed living in this wicked society, and he's clinging on to God. The righteous will live by their faith. Now he says, furthermore, wine betrays a haughty man. He goes on and spends much of the rest of the chapter talking about woe to the wicked people, because he said the wicked people who you've been praying about, they're not going to go unpunished. He gives a series of woes. And these series of woes, I'm just going to, for the sake of time, summarize these. But there's five woes in this passage. And these five woes, in all of this, we need to see all of chapter 2 is this answer to his questions. You know, God's judgment is coming. The righteous are going to live by their faith. And number 3, the wicked are going to be judged. And we can learn a lot about how God deals with nations just from these reading this section. I encourage you to go back and study that. Because when I summarize these two, you're going to think, well, we can kind of relate to nations who do this. And if we're honest with ourselves, we say, our nation has done this too in the past. The first woe in verses 5 through 8 is, he says, woe to greedy people who are greedy. They go after greedy conquest and plunder. God hates nations that just greedily go after conquest and plunder. He's going to judge nations like that. And in context, he's talking about the Babylonians, I think, but we learn how God deals with nations in the Old Testament. God still deals the same way with nations today. The second one, verse 9 through 11, is he says, woe to him who seeks security through evil gain. And again, I'm summarizing. Somebody who is looking for security, and we're all looking for security. You know, we look for security in paying off our house. We look for security by having savings, and even countries look for security and stability. But when they do it on the backs of other people in evil gain and stealing and cheating to do it, woe to those people. In verses 12 through 14, he gives another woe. Woe to him who builds himself up on the misery of others. In verse 15 through 17, woe to him who takes advantage of his neighbor. And he talks about someone who gets his neighbor drunk just so that their nakedness can be uncovered. And what's going to happen to them in the end? They're going to be the one who's going to be dishonored and shamed in the end. And then finally, in verses 18 through 20, he says, woe to him who worships idols. Now, we may not identify with idol worship today, but anything that we put above God is making an idol of that thing, and you can relate to that. If we worship, you know, the god of materialism, or even like Romans 1 talks about, Romans 2, if we actually worship our own desires, we've made ourselves, you know, the creature is worship, you know, the created thing is being worshipped rather than the creator. So all these things are God's reminding that the wicked will be judged and these wicked nations will be judged. And I think Habakkuk realizes this. It's an answer to his question. God's going to use these wicked nations for his purposes. The righteous are going to live by their faith. The wicked are not going to go unpunished. And finally, God is not asleep at the wheel. Look at verse 20. But the Lord is in his holy temple, and let all the earth be silent before him. This judgment has gone out. It will not delay. These people are going to be judged. And even though you don't see it as quickly as you want to see it, it's going to happen. And there's nothing that you can do to stop it. Now, how would we respond to God judging our nation? Think about it. If we were in Habakkuk's situation, he'd be very scared because, you know what, he lives here. And if God is going to bring this wicked nation upon him, there's going to be some suffering. Even if he's spared as a remnant, it doesn't mean he's going to be going through this thing unscathed. And I think he realizes this. But yet, what he decides to do is our 3W. We have, he wonders and he waits. He worships God. He continues to stay steadfast to God. And I love what he does. In chapter 3 is really a prayer of Habakkuk, and it's set to a song or kind of like a hymn. If you look at it, it says it's according to Shigionoth in chapter 3 and verse 1, which I think is a musical reference. And then if you look at the end of the chapter, it says for the choir director on stringed instruments. So you have this prayer that's set to a song. But look at the form of it. It's a request for God's action. He says, Lord, I've heard the report about you, and I fear. Verse 2. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of years. In the midst of the years, make it known. And what I think he's saying is, you know, God, I've heard stories about you in the past. I've read about what you've done in old, and I know how you work against wicked nations. Do something now. Do something in this generation. But I love what he adds on at the end of verse 2. He says, in wrath, remember mercy. In wrath, remember mercy. That is really, you could describe the gospel like that. You know, God's wrath, but also God's mercy. When he comes in judgment, he's going to save his people who've trusted in the Lord Jesus Christ. I'll talk more about that in a second. But the majority of this chapter is this splendid imagery about how this Babylonian army is sweeping across and conquering, but it's also this brilliance of the Lord moving. And there's also this flood imagery there too, which reminds us of the great flood of Noah's day, which swept across the earth, and you can imagine these waves just sweeping up people and destroying them along the way. So you have this imagery of like this God using this army to do the same thing, this Babylonians, as they're conquering and as they're going forth. But notice how he describes them. In verse 8, he says, did the Lord rage against the rivers, or was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the sea that you rode on your horses, on your chariots of salvation? What I find interesting about this is in the midst of this destruction, he calls these chariots of salvation. You'd think these are chariots of destruction. These Babylonians are coming across and they're destroying people. How could you call these chariots of salvation? Well, in verse 13, he says, you went forth for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. When God comes in judgment, he's coming to save righteous remnant. Think about Noah's day. Yes, you think about Noah as this great, the flood as this great destructive force, but really what it did is it took the righteous and rose them above that. And so it separated the righteous from the wicked. And so in the midst of this, he knows what's going to happen. He says in verse 15, you trampled on the sea with your horses, on the surge of many waters. And in verse 16, he says, I heard in my inward parts, and in my inward parts I trembled at the sound. My lips quivered. Decay entered my bones. And in my place I tremble because I must wait quietly for the day of distress. For the people who will arise to invade us. Now, as a righteous person living in a wicked nation, you might be able to relate to this in some ways. You know how God deals with wicked nations. You know that God cannot continue to overlook evil forever. That a wicked nation eventually is going to reach a point where God's going to have to bring judgment on it. And all you can do as a righteous person is pray about it and wait for the Lord's judgment. And yet you accept that. Now, we don't have the advantage of a prophet to come and tell us exactly what's going to happen. But again, we know how God works. And verse 17 through the end, to me, is one of the most amazing statements of faith that I find in Scripture. That even though he's going to suffer, he's going to continue to worship God. Read with me verse 17. He says, though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he's made my feet like hinds' feet, and makes me walk on my high places. Now, it's easy to serve God when everything's going right, when the refrigerator's full and the freezer's full, and you got the paycheck coming in, and you got money in the bank, and you can pay all your bills. It's easy to serve God when God is blessing you like that. But if God was to come and judge a wicked nation that we're living in, And in the process of that, it affects the economy, it affects food production, it affects all these things that are going on, would we still have the attitude of Habakkuk? That's amazing to me. Though we take everything away, he's still going to exult in the Lord, the God of his salvation. He's going to trust in God, because the righteous shall live by faith. There's judgment and salvation at the same time, mixed together. Now let's look at some of these New Testament passage. In the New Testament, we see in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16. Very familiar passage. Romans 1 and 16 says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes or has faith. Same Greek word, no difference there. Righteous shall live by faith. And then verse 17 is interesting. It says, for in it the righteousness... That could be translated justice. Habakkuk was praying about where's God's justice? God's justice is revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. See, when God brings judgment on the wicked, he shows up with his justice. Where's God's justice? Why aren't you doing anything about this? I'm going to bring my justice. I'm going to bring my righteousness. But those also in the gospel... We can be, God can declare us righteous. He can be just because Jesus Christ has taken our sin for us. But notice in verse 18, because we talked about judgment and salvation, we see in verse 17 that the righteousness of God is revealed. In verse 18, it says the wrath of God is revealed. So at the same time that God's righteousness is revealed, we also have his wrath being revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness. So it's interesting that right in between those two verses there, he quotes Habakkuk. What's going on in Habakkuk? God's judgment and salvation. What do we have here in the gospel? God's judgment, God's wrath, and his salvation. Right there together. And it calls to mind, if we're familiar with Habakkuk, what's going on in Habakkuk's mind, and we can relate to that. Two more. In Galatians chapter 3 and verse 11. Galatians 3 and 11, Paul's writing to the church in Galatia. There's some people who are Judaizers. They're trying to go back and be justified by the law there. And he's trying to say that we need to be justified by faith. And he says, to contrast two things here. In verse 11, he says, now the one who's justified by the law before God is evident, the righteous man shall live by faith. Galatians 3:11. He's quoting Habakkuk. The righteous man shall live by faith. He says, however, the law is not of faith. On the contrary, he who practices them shall live by them. He's quoting Leviticus 18:5. So here he's using Habakkuk, quoting two things. The righteous are going to live by faith. Those who are under the law are going to live by keeping the law. So how are you going to live? You want to try to live by keeping the law? The righteous are going to live by faith. Two different ways to live. Two different ways to find life. Either by keeping the law or by faith. And the final one I want to share with is Hebrews chapter 10 and how the Hebrew writer uses Habakkuk. I'll start in Hebrews chapter verse 23, because this is what commonly comes up when we talk about forsaking the assembly. He says, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good works, not forsaking our own assembling together, for it's the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. What day is this? I think he's talking about the day of judgment. God's judgment coming. And he goes on, talking about judgment in the next several verses. For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin, but a terrifying expectation of judgment. Now, he goes on, and if I can skip down to verse 35, he says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has great reward, for you have need of endurance, so when you've done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet in a little while, he who's coming will come, and he will not delay. That's Habakkuk. God's judgment's coming. It's not going to delay. Habakkuk 2:3. But my righteous shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we're not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith in the persevering of the soul. So what's going on here? Well, just like in Habakkuk's day, God's judgment was coming. The righteous were going to even suffer while they're waiting on God's judgment as well, but they're not going to shrink back. Even though they may be persecuted, look at Hebrews 10:32. He says, remember the former days when after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of suffering. So the righteous are going to, even when God's judgment is coming, there's going to be suffering, but we don't shrink back. We have endurance. Righteous live by faith. And even if the fig trees, even if all the fruit, production ceases up, he's just going to keep trusting in the Lord. That's exactly the same message that's trying to be, the Hebrew writer is trying to get across here. In chapter 10. So we can see in the context how they're using, the New Testament writers are using this message of Habakkuk to try to encourage Christians. Yes, we're going to be discouraged by the sufferings we encounter. We're going to be discouraged by the unrighteousness that's going on around us. We're going to wonder why God's not doing anything. Where's God's justice? But God is in his holy temple. He's not asleep at the wheel. His justice is coming. It will not delay. And we, the righteous, if we hold true to our faith, if we have steadfastness, if we hold fast, we will live by our faith. Well, in closing, I think, there's a couple things that he wrestles with here. If you want to think about the idea of Habakkuk wrestling with something, he wrestles with the spiritual decline in his nation. He wrestles with how God could allow this evil. He wrestles with God not answering his prayers as immediately as he thought. If you want to think about him, the idea of embracing, he embraces God's authority to bring judgment. He embraces God's discipline, even though he's going to suffer for it. And he also embraces the fact that he's going to receive his salvation through faith. So I think the applications to us, you can think of others. I'd like to hear them after worship. But I think we just need to, when we're wondering about what's going on, we need to humbly take our questions to God and seek God's counsel in prayer. By studying his word, as we're wondering about the state of our own nation or the state of our own culture, we need to be willing to wait on the Lord, even though we don't see God's immediate judgment and his justice. We need to wait on God's justice and hold fast, like the Hebrew writer says. We have a need of endurance. Don't throw away your confidence. Continue to remain faithful, even if things start going bad for us. Even if you don't seem to be as blessed as you once were, you need to continue to hold fast. And we need to decide now that we are going to worship him no matter what happens, even if things do get hard. We need to have that endurance and not shrink back and know that the righteous will live if we continue to remain faithful to God. Well, I hope this has been an encouragement to you. If we can continue in the example of Habakkuk, I think we'll do well. And I'm very encouraged by those that I've had an opportunity to meet. I hope to meet more of you during this short visit. If this is something that you've been struggling with this morning or in the past weeks or months or years, if you realize that you're in a situation where, you know, I really have gone off track. I really haven't been in the example of Habakkuk where I've really said, okay, I'm going to be faithful to God. You know, many times, you know, it's not a one-time decision. Just because you may have decided to trust in God when you were a teenager or early in your adult life, this is a constant process. Like I was saying, many of us, when we have this misconception that when we come to Christ, all of our problems are going to go away. That's not always the case. Sometimes things get harder before they get better. And sometimes things go well for a long time, and then we run into a hard place and our faith is under trial. What are we going to do? Are we going to have the attitude of Habakkuk that no matter what, I'm going to continue to be faithful, I'm going to continue to serve the Lord? That's what it's going to take. That's the kind of people that God is looking for. Even if everything, all the blessings are stripped away, I'm going to be faithful to God because that's the only way that I can find life. If that hasn't been you, I ask you to recommit. I ask you to repent for your sake and to serve the Lord. If you're subject to that invitation, I invite you to think about it, pray about it. If you have questions about it, there's brethren here that would be happy to study with you. But if I can encourage you in any way, let's do that. Let's be faithful to the end, no matter what happens in this nation, no matter what happens in our personal lives. Let's be faithful and serve.